Welcome to the Kindle Chronicles, a Friday podcast all about the Kindle. My name is Len Edgerly, and this is episode 31 for Friday, February 20, 2009. I'm recording on a rainy Thursday night at my home in Cambridge, Massachusetts tonight, where I traveled this week for the 82nd birthday of my father, who is a proud Kindle user, and the third birthday of my grandson, James, who ran me ragged today on a visit to Boston's terrific Museum of Science. I will return to Denver on Monday. I'm very excited to report that my guest for this week's interview is none other than Ian Fried, Amazon's Vice President for Kindle. During what I'm sure has been a very busy week, Ian spent nearly 15 minutes with me on the phone yesterday from Seattle, answering a long list of questions mainly suggested by listeners of this podcast. And yes, I did ask him about folders. In Kindle news, WhisperNet has been expanded to deliver Kindle 2 content in some previously great empty spaces, like my old hometown of Casper, Wyoming, as well as Fairbanks, Alaska, where my good friend Kes Woodward made a brilliant decision, it turns out, to wait for the second generation before getting a Kindle. I will also have a market report on what Kindle Ones are fetching and tell you why, if you're considering selling your original Kindle, you might want to do so sooner rather than later. This week's tech tip, courtesy of an anonymous Kindle Chronicles listener, is a consolation prize for all of you who hope the Kindle 2 would bring user-defined folders to the home screen. To try this adventurous tech tip, you'll need to use your USB cable, and you should know your way around your computer's file system pretty well before attempting it. But if you're game, this tip may help trim your too many pages of home screens back to something that's more manageable. The Kindle quote this week is from a literary icon added 10 days ago to the Kindle Store's magazine list, where it's already zoomed to the number one bestseller position. I'll have comments from Dorian Nissenson, Pam from Minnesota, Linda Hopkins, Ben Benner, and my anonymous tech helper. You can subscribe to this podcast at the iTunes Store or by going to the show notes page at thekindlechronicles.com. With that, let's turn to this week's Kindle news. So if you live in Casper, Wyoming, or Fairbanks, Alaska, among other places, mainly in the West, and you held off buying a Kindle until the second generation, you have been rewarded for your wait, it turns out. Amazon, in its frequently asked questions about the Kindle 2, states that, quote, "For Kindle 2, we expanded Kindle's national coverage to include more cities and areas in all 50 states, enabling wireless downloads of books, newspapers, magazines, and blogs." What wasn't clearly stated in the FAQ is that this expansion of coverage is only available to the Kindle 2. I called Kindle support today and asked about this and was told that the hardware in the Kindle 2 makes it possible to pick up the WhisperNet in some previously unavailable areas, but the wireless in those areas will not be picked up by Kindle 1. For some reason, it's difficult to pull up the maps for the Kindle 1 and the Kindle 2 side by side. These are the coverage maps. I had to use two computers to do this and look at one map on one screen and one on the other. What I see in comparing the maps are whole new regions of green on the Kindle 2 map, filling in much of the empty white spaces on the Kindle 1 map in the western United States, especially in my former home state of Wyoming, as well as Nevada, Montana, and the Dakotas. The expanded coverage is a huge improvement, but still leaves some white areas without coverage in, for example, western Wyoming and much of Idaho. If you bought a Kindle 1 in Casper or Fairbanks and now understandably want to switch to a Kindle 2 so you can use the WhisperNet, it looks as if a strong market is taking shape in which to sell your Kindle 1. Just now on Amazon, I find 74 used and new Kindle 1s are listed as available for prices ranging from $255 to $270 plus shipping. On eBay, I found completed sales for Kindle 1s ranging from $228.99 for a unit that was, quote, described as used only one time to read one chapter. And there's also a $300 one for a brand new Kindle 1 still in a factory sealed box. If you plan to sell your Kindle 1, I would suggest that you do it sooner rather than later. if Ian Fried is correct that this time Amazon will manage to keep up with Kindle demand, which he'll talk about in the interview, the market for Kindle Ones might see a softening in price because people will feel confident that they're going to get a Kindle 2 in a reasonable amount of time. But then again, who knows? We may see a contingent of Kindle 1 purists who insist on the original form factor and who scorn the Kindle 2's newfangled technology and insist that you're not really reading unless you can do it with a scroll wheel. As for me, I plan to hold on to my Kindle 1 and take it down to our storage unit, where it will begin the long project of becoming a treasured family heirloom decades hence, when I'm curled up in my leather chair with a steamer rug and my brand new Kindle 50. Time now for the tech tip. I've been enjoying an exchange of detailed emails from a listener who prefers to remain anonymous relating to the issue of folders. His system does not actually enable you to define folders that will show up on your Kindle's home screen with titles that you identify. But his system does give you the ability to temporarily hide titles on the home screen and to organize them using your own system of content organization folders that you will be able to see whenever you connect your Kindle to a computer using the USB cable. I'm going to walk you through my own personal implementation of this organizing system, and I'll have a link in the show notes to a separate detailed presentation in the words of my tech helper, who plans to post it at the KindleBoards.com forum. To follow along, you'll need to connect your Kindle to a computer with the USB cable and wait for the Kindle icon to show up in your Finder on a Mac or in My Computer on a PC. If you have an SD card in your Kindle, that will show up too as a separate icon. But to keep things simple, I'm going to assume that you're just looking at the icon for the Kindle's main memory. Now, at this point, if I've already lost you, it might be a good sign that this tech tip is going to be more frustrating than helpful, and there is some risk of messing up your Kindle's content organization if you try this without adequate computer skills to do it right. I'm sure Kindle support won't be able to bail you out if things go awry, so I'm going to issue a strong proceed at your own risk warning before pressing ahead. If you have any doubts about doing this, please don't, and instead you might want to skip ahead to the start of the interview with Ian Fried. So, okay, if you're still with me and you can see your Kindle icon on your computer, open it up so you can see five folders labeled Audible, Documents, Music, Pictures, and System. This is the root level of your Kindle. What we're going to do is create a new folder at this level. I called mine To Read Later because I have too much stuff visible on my Kindle home pages. I'd like to keep all that on my Kindle where I have plenty of memory available, but not have it show up in the home page. So go ahead and create a new folder at this level on your computer. For the purposes of this tech tip, I'm going to assume that you also named your new folder To Read Later, but in reality you can name it whatever you like. Now you need to open another window in the folder in the Finder, or My Computer, and navigate again to your Kindle's main memory icon showing the original five folders: Audible, Documents, Music, Pictures, and System. Let's position the new folder to the right of your screen and leave the previous window at the left. So now the window on the left has six folders in it, the original five plus To Read Later, and the window on the right has the original five folders: Audible, Documents, Music, Pictures, and System. Move the cursor into the right window and double-click on the Kindle's Documents folder. If you have lots of titles here, as I do, I suggest that you put the window in list view and make the window wide enough and long enough so that you can see the full names of the files and as many of them as possible. Now you're going to identify at least one title that you want to remain on your Kindle, but you are in no hurry to read, so you don't want it visible on the Kindle home screen anymore. When you know what that title is, you're going to drag it from the Documents folder in the window on the right of your computer screen to the To Read Later folder, which you created in the left window, which is showing the root level of your Kindle's main memory. But here's an important point. You're going to need to move two files for each title that you want moved. One ends in .azw if you bought it in Kindle format, or maybe .prc if you acquired it in MobiPocket format, or .txt if it's a text file. That file is the file that is the other half of each pair, ends in .m as in Mary, B as in Boston, P as in Peter, MBP. and it contains any highlights or notes that you've made in that content. When you know what pair of files you're moving, highlight them and drag them into the To Read Later folder in the left window. If you feel confident enough at this point, you can move as many other titles as you wish, as long as you remember to move both of the files that go with each title. We're just about ready now to unplug the USB cable and see how your Kindle home screen is going to look with these changes. You might want to double check and make sure that the title or titles that you want to hide on the Kindle home screen are now in the To Read Later folder that you created in the Kindle main memory root level, and that they are no longer in the Kindle's Documents folder. If so, you can safely eject the Kindle icon and then unplug the USB cable. When your Kindle home screen returns, you should see a shortened list of titles. The titles that you moved to the To Read Later folder are still safely in your Kindle, but to see and read them, you will have to reconnect the Kindle to the computer with the USB cable and move whichever ones you want to see and read again from the To Read Later folder back into the Kindle's Documents folders. I think you can see the possibilities. I hope so. You can create as many new folders at the root level as you like, in addition to the To Read Later folder that we just created. You might, for example, have a fiction to read later or a nonfiction to read later. The other thing that you can do is to create folders within the Kindle Documents folder and move titles into them. This won't change what you see on your Kindle home screen, because even though they're in subfolders, if they're in the Documents folders, they're going to show up on the home screen. But it does give you a way to organize your content in a way that's visible when your Kindle is attached to your computer with the USB cable. Since we haven't moved anything off of your Kindle in this system, you can use any computer to do this arranging, as long as you have a USB cable. The computer serves only as a temporary window showing what's on your Kindle in a way that the Kindle's home screen does not, and that's what makes this tech tip a potential way to adjust how your Kindle content is organized and viewed. Since my tech helper has not had a chance to try this on a Kindle 2, there's no way of knowing yet whether it will work on a Kindle 2 the way it does with a Kindle 1, so be sure not to go charging into this tech tip on a Kindle 2 before you've heard that it would work, or you can figure it out on your own. Now, it would be cool, I think, to be able to do all this on the Kindle itself, or maybe to set things up once on a computer so that you could see the To Read folder, a To Read Later folder and others on your Kindle, and be able to maybe move titles in and out of such folders without being connected to a computer with the USB cable. But I think, as this fairly daunting tech tip has shown, there are a lot of moving parts in this organizing method, and that's a good lead-in to what Ian Fried will have to say in the interview on the topic of folders. I want to thank my anonymous tech helper and to assure you that any errors or confusion in this implementation and explanation of his system are my fault, not his. I'm pretty excited to have survived the adventure, I'll have to say, and I can see how it will help me to enjoy my Kindle more, because I've been able to trim 7 pages on my home screen to a much more manageable 2 screens on my Kindle. And, you know, when I'm ready to load some more books onto the kind of active list of my home screen on the Kindle, I'll just plug in the USB and move some of those titles from the To Read Later file that I created into my Documents file. Ian Fried is Amazon's Vice President for Kindle, so I was very excited to have a chance to interview him by phone on February 18th. Last week, I received an email from Amazon's Director of Communications saying they'd like to do an interview on the podcast, but I wasn't sure who I'd be speaking with. I dreamed briefly of Jeff Bezos on the show, but in the event, we have the next best thing, nearly 15 minutes of nonstop questions and answers with the person responsible for the entire Kindle operation within Amazon. As I was preparing for the interview, I had the brilliant idea of sending an email to the Kindle Chronicles email alert list asking for question ideas. I received back a ton of terrific suggestions, and I asked as many of them as I could. This experiment in crowdsourcing an interview really had an impact on me and showed me how this podcast is turning into a real community effort. I'll play the interview in its entirety without editing, beginning with my answer to the incoming Skype call from Ian.
Hey, Len, it's Ian Fried from Amazon. How are you?
I'm great, Ian. Thanks so much for calling.
Oh, you bet. I'm a big fan of your show. I've listened to it a bunch of times, so it's it was very fun and flattering, especially in the early days, to hear your podcast. So it was fun.
That's great. Well, I've got a lot of listeners that are really following along, so it's turned into a great project just for all of the enthusiasm that I hear from fellow users.
That's awesome. How many listeners do you think you have these days?
You know, I think I've got subscribers, I'm guessing maybe about 400, and then monthly downloads are up about 4,000. And it's
oh, wow. So like 400 for regular, and then 4,000 are just kind of a range of people.
Sure, okay. Catching it on the website or whatever. But
that's great.
Yeah, it's going good.
Cool.
Well, cool. So can we jump right in?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, well, you're 6 days away from the launch of Kindle 2, and I was just thinking about what your priorities are. What's the most important thing you're going to try to accomplish in the next 6 days?
Well, you know, for us, we want to make sure that our fulfillment centers are really ready. We do, as you can imagine, have a lot of customers who have ordered Kindle 2. And we just want to make sure that the fulfillment centers can ship things out very smoothly to customers.
Now, you sold out the original Kindle in 5.5 hours. Do you expect anything like that to be the case for the Kindle 2?
Well, you know, in some ways, I mean, the 5.5 hour mark already happened a week ago. And we're in good shape. I mean, orders are terrific. We're really pleased with them. But we also were, I think, in a better position to understand what demand would be like. So we feel like, you know, things are going well.
That's great. Now, one thing I've heard a lot about from listeners, and I bet you've seen them on the forums too, is this issue of folders on the home screen. And I think a lot of people were hoping that would show up on the Kindle too. So the question I'm hearing is, do you see that as a possible software upgrade coming up where we'd be able to identify categories on our home screen and tuck titles into them?
Yeah, I mean, it's something we'd look at, but for us, the most important thing is to be able to do things that are really simple for our customers. Mm-hmm. And we've looked at ways to do this simply, and we haven't yet figured out a way to do it where customers would have a great experience with that. But it is something that, you know, if we can do that, we could offer it in the future. It's something we may do.
Right. I can see, because, you know, my parents are in their 80s and they use the Kindle. And if you had a feature like that that was too complicated, it could really put them off.
Yeah, I think that is one of the things that we want to make sure of. I mean, you know, Kindle 1 and Kindle 2 are both incredibly easy to use. And I think one of the things that we want to make sure of is that, you know, if we add things, we want to do it in a way that it's still very easy for our broad customer base.
Yeah, makes sense. Now, there were some earlier reports about that you might be working on a Kindle that would have a larger screen and that it would be great for the textbook market. Is there anything you can say about that project to confirm that you're working on it in any kind of a time frame?
Well, you know, we really see both Kindle 1 and Kindle 2 as good devices for reading textbooks. So, you know, we're seeing an increasing number of textbooks come to the catalog as it is.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How about book prices? There's been some reports of prices more than $9.99, and then one listener noted that Here Comes Everybody by Clay Shirky is selling for $14.27 in the Kindle version, and the pre-order in the paperback is only $10.88. Can you explain, what is there upward pressure on the prices, and it might be hard to keep that $9.99 maximum for bestseller hardcovers that come out?
Well, we're you know, in the Amazon physical bookstore, prices change all the time, and you see prices go up and down, and similarly in the Kindle store, that'll happen. So I can find you examples of books in the Kindle store that went down over time.
Uh-huh.
You know, we're always looking at pricing, but we are committed to $9.99 for New York Times bestsellers and new releases.
Oh, so that's something that you can kind of hold a line on, and you define it that way. It's the New York Times bestsellers.
New York Times bestsellers and new releases, yep.
That's great. So on the There's been talk about that you guys are excited about being able to read Kindle Common on smartphones like the iPhone and such. How do you see that as improving the reading experience, and what excites you about the day that we'll be able to do that?
Yeah, well, you know, we see mobile phones as actually a great companion to Kindle. So, for example, if I'm in the middle of a novel and I leave my Kindle at home and I run out, you know, to grab a few things at the grocery store, and I didn't bring my Kindle with me because I figured, you know, it'll be empty at the grocery store. I can whip through the line, no problem. I'll be back reading on the Kindle. Well, let's say it turns out there's a longer line at the grocery store. If I got my mobile phone, I can just pull it out, open up the book I was reading. And the great thing is, we talked about WhisperSync when we announced Kindle 2. WhisperSync allows you to open your mobile phone, open the book, and you'll pick up right where you left off on your Kindle. And then, you know, let's say you read 3 or 4 or 10 pages, put your mobile phone away, and you get home, and you once again open up that book, and you can just go right to where you left off without having to think about that. So that's all automated as part of WhisperSync. So it is. We do think it's really cool for our customers.
Can you say anything about when it might happen or how many people you're talking to on the telco side?
Yeah, it's something we're working on pretty aggressively. So what I would say is we are excited about offering it, and it's coming soon.
Great. Okay. Now, I also hear some concern from Kindle One users. Is it going to be supported with new software? Will there be battery replacements available? And what can you say about Amazon's commitment to people that have bought an original Kindle but maybe aren't in a position to buy a new one?
Yeah, no, we absolutely will continue to support Kindle One customers. In fact, as we talked about WhisperSync, we've started to roll out WhisperSync to Kindle One customers. So what it means is, you know, if I've got a Kindle One and I am in a position to upgrade to Kindle 2, I can do that same thing of picking up where I left off. So, you know, if I've got one at home and I happen to leave it at home and have brought one to work, I can pick up where I left off. And that's because of a software update to Kindle One. Mm-hmm. Things like batteries and you know, if there are any other issues, we'll continue to support Kindle One customers through the warranty program and also our repair program.
Now, if someone had to return a Kindle One under the warranty, would they be receiving a Kindle 2?
No, Kindle One.
Okay.
Yeah.
What feature of Kindle 2 are you personally most excited about?
Well, you know, I think probably the best improvement just for me is how thin it is, actually. You know, I just throw it in my bag, and it's so much thinner than the original. It's also, you know, I find it more comfortable to hold. You know, just overall, I love the way it looks. My 13-year-old also looked at it, you know, the first couple times, and he said, "That is really cool looking, Dad." So he's a big Kindle user himself. He's got a Kindle One, but he saw Kindle 2, and he thought, that is a cool device.
That passes an important test.
Yeah, it does.
Are there any undocumented features of the Kindle 2 that we haven't heard about in the blogs yet? Like, will it play Minesweeper? Are there any other little secret things that people will be writing books about?
Well, you know, nothing that I know of offhand, but I'm sure somebody will find something in there that might be fun. So.
Yeah. Well, it's fun to hunt for them, probably.
Yep.
Will the web browser on Kindle 2 be noticeably faster or easier to use than the browser in Kindle 1?
Yeah, you know, kind of with all our features, we try to find ways to improve them. The web browser, I mean, one thing that customers will notice immediately, excuse me, is because of the five-way, you are able to move around within a website and just click on a link, whether it's, you know, in the middle of the page or at the edge of the page, much like you would on a PC web browser or what have you.
Right.
So that's one improvement that's there. But, you know, there may be some others as well. As we roll it out to customers, I think we'll get pretty good feedback on, you know, where we've improved it and where we could improve it more.
Mm-hmm. Now, if someone had books on an SD card in a Kindle One, will it be easy enough to move those to the memory on the Kindle 2 using the WhisperSync?
Yeah, I mean, one thing is just re-download them. I mean, that's really easy, right?
Sure.
Anytime you delete a book to free up space or what have you, it's incredibly easy to just re-download. So that's probably the simplest way. But there'd be other ways to do it as well, using a PC if you need to do that.
Are you doing anything special with libraries, though? One person suggested some kind of a setup where libraries would have access to Kindle versions, maybe similar to the samples feature, but that seems to be an important part of the book economy, and wonder if you've got some interesting things going on there.
Yeah, we haven't had a tremendous amount of sort of interest or people requesting that feature, but it is something that, if a lot of customers are interested in, it's something we could take a look at. We'd also want to make sure, though, that it works really well for customers. And again, sort of getting back to that complexity versus simplicity issue,
Right.
want it, if we do it, it's got to be really simple.
Does President Obama have a Kindle?
Not that I know of, as you've probably, since you've been following Kindle so closely, you know of folks who are well known either in politics or entertainment or what have you that kind of talk about their own Kindle. But we also just want to maintain our customers' privacy. So, obviously when people talk about it themselves, and there are a lot of both celebrities and people in political life that have them, which we love, but we never we just make it standard policy to never reveal that information.
Yeah, that makes sense. Beta testers, my listeners they'd love to volunteer to help out if you ever do any beta testing. Is that part of what you do when you roll out a new version?
Well, we have beta testers, kind of for a bunch of different reasons, and I think if you have listeners who are interested in beta testing, the best thing to do is to email Kindle feedback, which I know probably a lot of your listeners already do,
Right.
and just say, I'm interested in being a beta tester. Can you put me on the list of folks who want a beta test? And as you can guess, we do have a lot of folks interested. But we definitely go out to beta testers from time to time.
Oh, that's cool. Last thing is, have you thought about a security feature so that you'd have to have a password to get into the Kindle, or maybe designate some titles private so that if someone was looking at your home screen, they wouldn't see every book that you're reading?
Again, I would say this is something that not a tremendous number of customers have asked for. If it's something we could do, again, ensuring that it's really simple, it's something we might look at. But it's not a feature or set of features that a tremendous number of customers have asked for yet.
Good. Well, that's great. I think we're at about the time that you had available. Anything else you'd like to say to an audience of tremendous fans?
I think we certainly appreciate all the support we're getting from Kindle customers. It's been incredibly fun and interesting. It's great to run this business. And from our perspective, what could be more important than trying to innovate on the book and the reading experience? It's something we think about every day at Amazon, and it's really a fun time to be involved in inventing new ways to read. So that's what I would say.
That's great. Well, I really appreciate hearing from you, Ian. Maybe in a couple of months when your life returns to something like normal, we could revisit again.
That sounds great.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Have a
All
great
right.
day.
You bet. Thanks, Lon.
Yep. Bye. I want to thank Ian for a great interview. And also, I want to thank Drew Herdner for helping set up the interview from the Amazon Communications Department. And if you want to know where I got all those smart questions, you can thank the following listeners who helped out: Randall Stafford, Bob Cope, Pat Hahn, Mary Bleck, Pam, Dan Myers, Al McDermott, Linda Hopkins, Mary McManus, Rebecca, Larry Goss, Marie Sotiriou, Shelley Crawford Stock, Bill Brogdon, and Jody Clark. Thank you to all. The New Yorker, which was added to the Kindle store 10 days ago, is now the best-selling magazine of the 22 now available in Kindle format. I haven't subscribed to the print magazine in years, but I immediately ponied up for the $2.99 a month subscription for my Kindle. This literary icon arrives every week, so that's a lot of fine reading for a dime a day. One thing I don't like about the New Yorker's Kindle edition is that the stories do not contain word counts, as do the stories in my Washington Post and Financial Times subscriptions. I find it helpful to know if I'm starting a 500-word piece or something running into the thousands of words. Over the years, I'll have to confess I've had mixed feelings toward the New Yorker, depending on whether I've been looking at it as a reader or as an author. For most literary writers, I suspect this magazine is the Mount Everest of publications, the peak of prestige. The closest that I ever got was a personal rejection note from the poetry editor that had actually been signed, as opposed to a tiny printed form rejection. So resentment mixed with envy may lie behind a profane reference that I made to the magazine in a piece which I just uploaded to the Kindle store via the digital text platform. It's titled A Poet's Progress at Bennington, Volume 1, and it's the first of a series that I plan to upload comprising work which I did while earning my Master of Fine Arts degree in poetry from Bennington in 2003. The DTP publishing process is remarkably simple, and I highly recommend it. If you've got a literary gem or two languishing on a hard drive, you might want to try it out to find some new readers via the Kindle. So for the Kindle quote this week, I'm going to read an excerpt from the February 23rd New Yorker's Reporting and Essays section titled The Background Hum, Ian McEwan's Art of Unease. This is a profile of England's star novelist by Daniel Zalewski. Page-turning excitement has long been a suspect virtue in a literary novel, and some critics have disparaged McEwan as a hack with elegant prose. He does lean on noirish tropes, the climaxes of Enduring Love and Saturday. Both involve a deranged man, a trembling woman, and a knife. But McEwan believes that something stirring should happen in a novel. Though he is animated by ideas, he would never plop two characters on a sofa and have them expound rival philosophies. The opening to Enduring Love offers a crisp illustration of game theory. When a balloon becomes untethered, each of the five men holding a rope is forced to make a decision without knowing what the others will do. But most readers enjoy it as a thrilling set piece. On our walk, McEwan twice cited Henry James's dictum that the only obligation of a novel, quote, is that it be interesting. Later, McEwan declared that he finds most novels incredibly boring. It's amazing how the form endures. Not being boring is quite a challenge. That was all a direct quote from McEwan. That's the Kindle quote for this week from The Background Hum, Ian McEwan's Art of Unease by Daniel Zalewski in The New Yorker. Turning now to Kindle comments, I sent out some highlights of Ian Fried's answers to the Kindle Chronicles email alert list, and here is one reply that came back to that from Dorian Nissenson, who wrote, I can hardly wait for Friday's podcast, not to mention February 25th when my Kindle 2 arrives. You are doing an excellent job with your podcast, and I really enjoy them every week. Keep up the good work. I found the answer about Amazon's commitment to, quote, keeping it simple, very compelling, as I gave a Kindle to my soon-to-be 89-year-old mother, who loves to read, but still has Post-it note instructions attached to her very basic TV remote. She has now been using her Kindle for almost 2 months and loves it. Granted, she is not using most of the features, but I loaded it up with 40 or so books, and she has finished 4 so far. Really an amazing accomplishment by Amazon and my mother, for whom the term technophobe must have been coined. That's from Dorian. Thanks, Dorian, and great story about hearing about your 89-year-old mother. On February 15th, Pam from Minnesota left this message on the show notes page. Hi, Len. I was really looking forward to your podcast this week because of the release of the Kindle 2 and enjoyed your interview with Joshua Topolsky. I also followed his live blog last Monday and found it to be the best on the web. I was torn about buying the Kindle 2, but can't get the idea out of my head that I could buy 36 or more books for the money I would be spending on something I already have. My Kindle 1 does everything I want it to, and the new features of the Kindle 2 don't excite me enough to buy. Maybe Kindle 3 will be more exciting. Thanks for your very interesting and always educational podcast, Pam from Minnesota. And this is from Linda Hopkins. Hi, Len. I spotted an article that recommends the Kindle for children and others with special needs due to disabilities, and I'll include the link in the show notes. I thought this sentence from the article was interesting, Linda writes. Advocates for the blind urge Amazon to make the Kindle more useful to the blind by adding audio prompts for downloading and reading books. Yet another use for the Kindle. I hope it happens. She continues, today I turned on my Kindle and went directly to the Kindle store, or actually, I would have gone directly to the Kindle store if I had remembered to turn WhisperNet on. Instead, I get the message saying that I should try later because of a low battery or poor signal. I thought, wouldn't it be nice if Kindle 2's message in a similar situation would be, WhisperNet is turned off, would you like to turn it on? Or even better, it could simply flash a message that says, WhisperNet turned on, and then proceed to the Kindle store. I think WhisperNet will be software-driven on Kindle 2, so maybe it could turn itself on when needed. Perhaps Kindle 3 won't even have a WhisperNet turn-on-off function. It could simply turn on and off when needed. The possibilities are fun to contemplate, Linda. I came across an item by a blogger named Ben Benner at ben.dominguez-benner.com/blog. It was from February 16th, and it was titled, Oh, Shiny Click. Read the first part of it. These were the sounds heard the other day as my wife made the purchase of her Kindle 2. Gina has had her current Kindle since October of 2008. During this time period, she has raved about the marvels of this ingenious little electronic device. I don't know this for a complete fact, but I am pretty sure she has convinced a few people to buy one of those buggers. Did I mention that she is a bit of a Kindle fanatic? At lunch, we listen to the Kindle Chronicles, a weekly podcast debuts every Friday. The man's voice that narrates the Chronicles has got this weird, soothing aspect to it. Maybe that is what got Gina to make the purchase of the Kindle 2. Well, that one made me smile. I'd also like to note that if you feel led to click on an order button after listening to this podcast, feel free to make the click on my Amazon Associates button on the right side of the show notes page at thekindlechronicles.com. If you do, I will receive a modest payment from Amazon that helps support the podcast for things like the occasional new microphone or headset and the monthly server hosting charges. And finally, I've got some closing comments on files and folders from the anonymous tech tip blogger, which helped me with that system in the tech tip. He writes, I've been thinking about the user interface problems Kindle would have trying to do this using the given form factor, and I think that giving us folders is not a trivial matter, as some have suggested. As you implement this on your own Kindle, just imagine trying to build and load your folders using only the Kindle's keyboard and verbal dialogues. Some have suggested that if the Kindle can group magazines and newspapers, it should be able to do the same with books. Well, the system used for stacking subscriptions is not a folder system. It relies on some common identifier somewhere in the file, an identifier that groups all of the publications of the same name, something that won't work for books of various names, whose only commonality is an abstraction assigned by the user. People aren't thinking. It's easy to say, program this and program that, but it ain't always as easy as it looks. I love including your comments on the show, so please feel free to join the conversation. You can leave an audio comment very easily by calling 206-666-2713. That's basically just a voice messaging system, so you can re-record your message so you get it the way you want it, and then I'll be able to include it in the podcast. You can also email me at podchronicles@gmail.com or leave a comment on the show notes page at thekindlechronicles.com. If you'd like to be included in my Kindle Chronicles email alert list, please do drop me a line at podchronicles@gmail.com. I send those on the list an email the moment I've uploaded a new episode, as well as occasional alerts on late-breaking Kindle news. The list currently has 62 listeners on it, and they are becoming more a community than a mere list of names, as was made very clear to me in the preparation for this episode's interview with Ian Fried. with all the great questions that I received. So because of that, I had the idea this morning that I'd like to invite your suggestions on what to name this growing group of Kindle Chronicles loyalists. So if you have an idea, something clever and catchy that could be the new name, just email it to me and I will happily award a $10 Kindle gift certificate to the winning entry. My guest next week for the interview, if all goes well, will be someone from Nuance Communications. That's the company here in Burlington, Massachusetts, not far from Cambridge, which developed the text-to-speech system that is one of the hot new features on the Kindle 2. I've been in communication with the company's public relations firm to schedule a phone interview early next week when I will be back in Denver. Music for my podcast is Ramonk by Eval Monagat on the Variations in Time, a Jazz Perspective CD by Public Transit Recording, courtesy of IODA Promonet. This is Len Edgerly from just outside Harvard Square in Cambridge, Massachusetts, for the Kindle Chronicles, reminding you to read different. I really appreciate your taking the time to listen to my podcast and participate in it for all of you who did. Have a great day. Bye.